Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. Welcome to Bob and Yurt Live. I'm the pastor of Denver Bible Church. Ken Scott was on yesterday with those two awesome black gals, Edmé and Bevelin. Audio from them at the local abortion mill. And boy, what a great show. Ken Scott has just received a phone call from a Muslim from Pakistan who he met at the abortion mill. I'll tell you about that in a moment. Also, Chuck Missler has just passed away. Chuck Missler, longtime Bible teacher. In fact, I attended his Monday night Bible study in Costa Mesa, California, for about a year on and off from maybe it was 1978. What a great time that was. I'd like to talk a bit about Chuck Missler and the things he did that were so solid and so exciting. And then he eventually came on the show. Some years after I had first met him, maybe it was about 21 years later, and I had asked him before we went on air to please don't talk about Y2K, and because some of his end times and prophecy stuff were areas that we disagreed on. But I do think, if I recall right, he went there anyway. But I want to talk about Chuck Missler. Also, reason number 1,209 to get your kids out of public school. And this one, it's not about morality or spirituality. This one is academic, and it comes from the U.S. Department of Education about the total failure of our public school teachers. Our teachers' failure, not only in the urban areas, in the major cities, where it's an absolute academic catastrophe, but across the whole nation. So we'll talk about that. But first, Ken Scott, he was on the program yesterday, and we played audio of two black gals from the East Coast who come out to visit now and then here in Denver. They've come to Denver Bible Church on occasion, and they go with our church members to the Planned Parenthood abortion mill where they dismember unborn children. And they call out to women going in there. They're so powerful. And so what a great show that was yesterday. Thank you so much to Ken and Joe Scott for your decades of service to the Lord and to the innocent, trying to save the lives of children who are about to be killed at Planned Parenthood and save the souls of the mothers and the fathers, the family members who are going there thinking they're getting help. And they're going there to have their child killed, their grandchild killed. Just devastating. So Ken Scott just gets a call from a man from Pakistan who he meets at the abortion mill as the guy is driving in at the driveway. Ken Scott is normally at the driveway, and his wife, Jo Scott, maybe about 30 yards to the south on a ladder to talk to the women once they park and they're walking into the abortion mill, so she could get up over the fence to talk to women going in there. You have maybe 30 seconds to try to encourage them not to go in. Don't kill your child. So Ken often is able to get people to stop at the driveway as they're driving in, give them literature and talk to them. And there was a Muslim couple going in from Pakistan. They're going in to kill their child. So Ken Scott is condemned by so many Christians, it's really unbelievable, and by so many pro-lifers, because they don't like that he holds signs showing what their baby will look like after the abortion. And they just don't like even him calling out, please don't kill your baby. This is tough love. Please, God loves you. Don't do this. So Ken gets this car to stop. They talk to him. They decide to not kill their child. This just happened just 2 months ago. So it's a husband and a wife. Like I said, they're Muslims. The husband just calls Ken and Joe just last night, calls them and says, I need your phone number was on the literature you gave me. I needed to thank you. You saved our child. We are so grateful. We're so humbled. Thank you for doing this for us. And, you know, what an honor it was for Ken and Joe to talk to this man. And he said, all I've been thinking about ever since is God and what you've told me about God. And I want to get to know God better. I want to know who he is. And so, Lord willing, please pray for this man and his wife and their child, but also for Ken and Joe, that they'll be able to meet, which looks like it's going to happen, and that he will come to trust Jesus Christ as his Savior. He's afraid of his own family. Being Muslims, he shared that he's afraid of what his own family may do to them if they become Christian. So, and other Muslims. So please pray for them. And when Ken Scott is condemned by so many, including so many pastors in the Denver area who've condemned Ken and Joe, you know, they've been doing this for decades. Their reputation is known far and wide. And I think about Jesus saying, blessed are you when men revile you and curse you for righteousness' sake. So they're blessed. They're absolutely blessed. And it's an honor to know them and that they attend Denver Bible Church. If you're looking for a church in the Denver area, you're curious, you're interested, please, you're invited to come out to Denver Bible Church Sunday mornings, Sunday school at 9:30, and then the service at 11 o'clock. I think you'll be blessed, and we'll be blessed to get to meet you or to see you again if you're an old friend. Okay, before Chuck Missler, reason number 1,209, Doug McBurney and I have been doing this for years. Doug's career, it's the same as he's had for many years. He travels a lot, but it's become more demanding of late, and that's why he hasn't been on the show. Boy, do I miss Doug McBurney in studio. Well, Doug and I, over the years, we do reason number, get up to reason number 67 to get your kids out of public school, keep them out. Reason number, get up to the hundreds, 200s. We're now up to reason number 1,209. To get your kids out of public school or to keep them out. And this one is academic, where normally it's things like the latest news story of a teacher having sex with a student in the classroom, on and on and on. Just the horrors never end. But this comes from the U.S. Department of Education, and it has to do with the proficiency of the students in math and reading. 65% of eighth graders in American public schools in 2017 were not proficient in, get this, trigonometry? No, not trigonometry. Macroeconomics? No, not macroeconomics. Egyptology? No, not Egyptology. In reading. You know, we have pointed out that this has been a crisis for a long time. Back when there was a presidential debate at Denver University, and we set up a table to engage the students in the whole day prior to the debate. They set up a debate alley. We had a great booth there, a wonderful time. The students were immoral. They were godless. They were perverse. But it was an opportunity to try to reach them. I pick up a newspaper, a school newspaper, and right on the front page, and they weren't even embarrassed about it. They just reported it as though it was nothing special. They said the number one course, the most popular course in all of duh. What's duh? It's the abbreviation for the University of Denver. It's spelled D-U-H, duh. The number one most popular course on campus is remedial English. And I thought, what a condemnation of America's public school system, K through 12. They get all the way through 13 years of a public education, and now they're in college, in one of the more expensive colleges in Colorado, and they don't know how to read. How's that? and we're talking about their mother tongue. This isn't the curriculum's not in Latin. It's not in French. It's in English. And they grew up here and they can't read or write English hardly. 65% of eighth graders in American public schools in 2017 were not proficient in reading, and 67% were not proficient in math. So we're talking about, for public school teachers tuning in right now, we're talking about two-thirds of your students are failing. Two-thirds. Oh, sure, you pass them, and they go on grade after grade after grade, but you've dumbed them down. They're brilliant. They're able to learn, but the public school teachers are failures. And that's the average. If you look at the large cities, it is absolutely horrific. What if you look at, where do you want to look at? What city do you want to look at? You want to look at Baltimore? That's a liberal utopia if there ever was one. How about Detroit? Wherever the liberals are totally in control. In Baltimore, you've got 11% of the kids are proficient in math and only 13% proficient in reading. How's that? Almost 9 out of 10 can't do math. Cleveland, Ohio, 11% proficient in math, only 10% proficient in reading. 10%. 90% can't read, or they can't read well enough to just be acceptable. In Detroit, how about Detroit? 7% proficient in reading, only 5% of Detroit public school students were proficient in math. That means 19 out of 20 can't hardly figure out how much change they should get when they're talking to a cashier. 19 out of 20. How's that? So the government school system, by definition, is a failure because God never authorized governments, bureaucrats, to raise and educate our children. And when the government steps in and does something it's not supposed to do, then the parents and the families relinquish their responsibility in that area. And that is unavoidable by human nature. So the teachers want to blame the parents. The problem is the parents all went to public school. The parents are bad parents because of the public school. And the teachers all want to blame the administrators, but the administrators are not in the classrooms. It's very much in vogue for conservatives and libertarians to blame the administrators, but to praise the teachers. You want to talk about false praise? Come on, you blame the teachers? The teachers are the ones that are implementing the godless curriculum. Is it inherently a sin for a Christian to teach in a public school? No, not necessarily. When the Nazis have occupied France, you could be part of the underground, the resistance. So you could be a Christian in a public school trying to save some, to be a light if possible. But if you lie to the parents, if you give them a false sense of security to keep their kids in public school, then you are sinning as a Christian teacher. And if you think you got to lie in order to keep your job, see, public school teachers, if you criticize the public schools, they will lash out at you, they'll mock you, they'll disagree with you, but that's not the way to do it with them. First, you're friendly with them, and you're having a cup of coffee, and you let them talk about what it's like at work. And they will tell you what the living hell is like. And when they talk to one another, there's no end to the way that they acknowledge that the system is in crisis. It's a catastrophe. But then, like children, then when you point it out, then they defend the school like children. The problem is there's lives and souls at stake, and Christian parents who send their kids to a godless education system are sinning by doing that. They're sinning. Unless the courts have taken away control and the courts say your child has to go to a government school. That happens in Europe. That happens where their child custody issues. So there are instances where parents have actually lost control. Like in England, where the Prime Minister just reminded all the people in England that, oh, and by the way, you know that we own your children, right? You don't own them, we do, the government. Oh, wait, that was in The Onion? No, that wasn't in the Babylon Bee. So that was a fake news story. But it was awfully close to reality with Alfie Evans and Charlie Gard and so on, these kids that the government wants to see dead, even though their parents are fighting to save them. Okay, so that's reason number 1,209. I mentioned Baltimore, how bad, right? And Cleveland and Detroit. Is it any better in California? Fresno, pretty much horrific. And it's CNS News has a report on the U.S. Department of Education report, which is also available thanks to the internet. So everybody can see what a nightmare it all is. So giving our children a Christ-centered education is a moral obligation that God has put on parents. Giving your child a Christ-centered education is a moral imperative. God expects that of you. And so whatever sacrifices you have to make to get your kid out of the godless public schools and give her a Christ-centered education, that sacrifice is worth it. All right, so now Chuck Missler has just passed away. He lived, boy, he had, what a career he had. He was a high-tech big shot early on in the information revolution. I think one of the companies he ran was Western Digital. But then he went to a second career, which was his true passion, which was Bible study and teaching. And he was a great Bible teacher. And it was back in the late 70s. I'm trying to recall, I went to Costa Mesa, California in 1978 to study the Bible there. And that's when I began attending Chuck Missler's Monday night Bible study. Back the year before that, I had attended Nyack Bible College. That's in New York State. What a beautiful part of the country. It's on the Hudson River, right on the river by the Tappan Zee Bridge, which they've just rebuilt. And for those who don't know the area, it's just north of Manhattan and the Bronx, you know, across the river from Nyack was what, Yonkers and Mount Vernon. In fact, right across was Tarrytown and Sleepy Hollow. So at Nyack Bible College, I studied Greek, which was, I think, the most profitable thing I studied there, and because the New Testament was written in Greek. And so there are times when looking at the original Greek is helpful. I mean, generally speaking, our translations are very powerful. They're great tools online. But if you have the opportunity to study Greek, it could come in handy. It's fun, too, to read the words as they were spoken by the apostles. You know, the Old Testament was translated into Greek about almost 300 years before Christ in what we call the Septuagint. And so it's also interesting to go to the Septuagint and compare the Hebrew Old Testament with our English translation and with the Greek Septuagint. And then, of course, here in Denver, the Dead Sea Scrolls are here. So you've got the Great Scroll of Isaiah, and at the Denver Museum of Nature and Science, at the exhibit, which is here until September, they actually have a portion of Isaiah 53 out, which is the suffering servant, the Messiah, paying for our sins. Just so awesome. It really is awesome. And the affirmation of the integrity of the scriptures. It's so cool to study, and as the Apostle Paul writes, to show yourself approved. Well, even though I enjoyed going to Bible college there, NIAC College, NIAC Bible College, I was somewhat disappointed. I had Bible classes, theology, the book of Job, I recall studying, and like I said, Greek, but I felt that much of it was superficial. I wanted to really understand the Bible at a deeper level, at a more serious level than maybe what I could get in a handful of Sunday school classes at church. And I just did not sense that that was happening at Bible college. So a friend at college had been an atheist and as a high school student and an alcoholic and after high school. And he ended up coming to the Lord through the ministry of Chuck Smith at the Costa Mesa Calvary Chapel. His name was Wally. So Wally says to me, Bob, you will love studying the Bible in California, Costa Mesa. So I decided to go with him. That was in, let's see, I think it was late May of 1978. We drive across the country in his Volkswagen van, and I get to Calvary Chapel. It's a Sunday night, and they have a service. Thank God I get to enjoy the service. Chuck Smith teaching out of the Bible, so simply going through the whole Bible verse by verse. That's what we do at Denver Bible Church. You can hear some of that on Thursdays on Theology Thursday on our website and TheologyThursday.com. And also people who love it, then they subscribe so they get a lot more of the Bible studies. They want to go through the Bible with us. So I arrive at Chuck Smith's church and then stayed there for some time, went back to New Jersey, traveled out again a second time to continue studying the Bible there. It was very intentional. And I actually had very little money and no idea where I would live or work. So I get to the church. I think it might have been a Wednesday night service. And I forget exactly the day of the week. And one of the elders of the church, I tell him my story. I've just come across the country. I'm there to study the Bible. I need a place to stay. I need a job. And he says, well, do this. Here's our prayer room. And it was beautiful. He says, spend the night in our prayer room. I look at him like, what? Back in New York City, if you do that, they'll arrest you. They'll throw you in jail. No, really. Spend the night here. And tomorrow morning, early at 6:30, there's a businessman's prayer breakfast. Go to the prayer breakfast and let them know you're looking for a place to stay and a job. So I get there. So I wake up. There are 300 men at the prayer breakfast, 300. So, and what a fabulous meal. The women of the church, the wives, the moms, they cooked fabulous. What a message. Then they ask for prayer requests. So I raise my hand and I say, I've come here to study the Bible from New Jersey, and I'm looking for a place to stay and a job. So the guy sitting right across the table from me says, I own a car lot. You could work for me. Are you any good at selling cars? I said, no, but I'll try. He said, okay, you're hired. The guy sitting right next to me said, I have a 5-bedroom home. I got a couple roommates, all Christian guys. You got a place to stay. And that was it. Took all of about 30 seconds. So on Monday nights, Chuck Missler taught. And that was so awesome because to get to sit there, you know, at his feet basically and hear him. And what he was brilliant at was finding what Jesus said, where the Old Testament, the scriptures speak of me. And there's so many places where Jesus Christ is being alluded to, symbolized, prophesied of, sometimes vaguely, many times very explicitly in the Hebrew scriptures from Genesis to Malachi. And Chuck Missler was brilliant at presenting all that. But by the time years later that I ended up on the radio with my own talk show that began in May of 1991, Then 1999, Chuck Missler is invited on the show. My producer invites him and he agreed to come on. And so I recall before the program asking him, Chuck, we agree on so much. I've learned so much from you. I just am, it's an honor to have you on the program. But we don't agree on everything. And for example, the Y2K thing, the year 2000 computer bug, that we don't agree on. So it'd be better to avoid that. Well, he wasn't able to avoid it. He brought it up. It was really discouraging. Back then, I used to sell. We were on in 80 cities, five nights a week for an hour. I used to sell a Y2K survival kit because the way it was told by a lot of extremists, including Christian extremists, was that there's a computer bug where when you go over to the year 2000, the computer hardware and software can't handle it, and all the computers are going to, they're all going to stop operating. They're all going to break. And so your gas stations can't sell you gas. And the electric utility can't send you electricity because the power grid is going to go down. And they can't deliver food. And everything is going to break everything. And so I had a technical background. I had, in the meantime, I'd gone to Arizona State University for computer science. I worked for Microsoft in Redmond, Washington. McDonnell Douglas Helicopter Company as a software engineer. So I looked into the Y2K thing, and I saw that it's not true. Many companies, including Indianapolis Power and Light, had switched to the year 2000 on all their computers like 2 years before, just in case there were any bugs, they could fix them. So they've been, in 1998, they're pretending it's the year 2000. You get it? So we sold a Y2K survival kit for $499.95 at exactly midnight on December 31st, 1999. At midnight, it would cut the power to your house so that your wife didn't think you were a nut. And then for the luxury edition, the Y2K survival kit, you know, platinum, it cost $1,000. And that would also cut the water to your house. So it's midnight, it's Y2K, your lights go out, the water's off, and your wife doesn't think you're a lunatic. So we did that for some time. But, you know, dear Chuck Missler, he had to go there. And he warned people about Y2K, and that was unfortunate. But certainly that doesn't take away from his decades of sharing the Lord with tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people. And I was one of those. And what a debt of gratitude I have to Chuck Missler and Chuck Smith, and in fact, so many others. And so what a reunion it'll be when we're all with the Lord and we get to see these Chucks. May God bless you.